Good evening.
Hi.
We are waiting for a few more people. Do you have any questions while we're waiting?
This is the this is Mini Zohar class, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I don't recognize your voice, so I apologize.
My name's Miriam. I've been emailing you.
It's nice to meet you.
Hi.
I've been enjoying our emails.
You're good. Yeah, me too.
Perfect. Right now it's just you on the line, so
okay.
I try and wait for a couple of people as a minimum. But we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
But for the mini Zohar class, you're probably better off not muting your phone.
Okay.
Because it's an interactive class, much more so than the ones you've been on.
Okay. I just hope that the kids in the background don't disturb it.
If they do, I'll say something, but probably not.
Okay. Okay.
Also, I wanted to mention, I haven't put it in my email to you, but there's a link on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, and I don't know if you found the matrix yet or not, but it's about 2 inches down, scrolling down of the Revealed Wisdom page. But the last row, the third column from the left, there's a link to all of the recordings, all the recent recordings, and they're by date.
Let me see, because I did see, I'm still trying to get the full find things. I'm starting to get used to it. I did see the whole schedule there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it's on the, if you click on the Revealed Wisdom page, and then just scroll down so you see the green and white lines.
Right.
And then the last row, you'll see where it says class recordings by date.
Oh, okay. Well, is that, would that have the ones that you've been doing in the morning? Will they be there?
Yes, they are there. The one from this morning I haven't put on yet. I usually do it late at night.
Right. And then, so then, like, I remember there was some I clicked on that weren't there.
I just got an email from somebody who was having trouble getting on. The phone systems were a little messed up. There was horrible weather in Atlanta and in the some of the other southern states. So hopefully they'll come on and
get the sun.
I heard somebody come on, but I don't know who it is. Please identify yourself.
Sarah? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Oh, no, this is Malka.
Well, welcome, Malka.
Thank you.
Sana said she was having trouble getting on with the phone, so.
Yeah, we've had some really bad weather over here yesterday, so it could be.
We had it in Atlanta today, so it could be all part of the connection.
Right.
Well, let's get started. Hopefully she'll join us. We're in section 64 of the Sulam Commentary on the Zohar by Rabbi Ashlag. And we're in verse 373, section 64 of the Bereshit Bet. And we start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kud shabarichu ishkin te bibilu urchimu urchilu urchilu urchimu. Leyachta l'shem yud he b'vav he b'yichuda shilim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'sok Torah mitzvah v'yihino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu konenei aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu konenehu. Rabbi Abba Amar Yoma de'avar Adam al pikuda timareya bayayin shemayim varets leit akara me'atrayhu memtet begin di'inun lakaymu ela al berit diktiv im lo beriti Yomam balayla ukot shamayim baretz lo samti v'yadam avar perit shene'emar v'heima ki adam avru perit. Rabbi Abba said that on the day that Adam transgressed his master's command, heaven and earth wanted to be uprooted from their places. Why? Because they are based only on the covenant, as it is written, if my covenant be not day and night, it were as if I had not appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. Adam broke the covenant, as it is written, but they, like Adam, have transgressed the covenant. Hence they lost their foundation and asked to be uprooted. Questions, comments, thoughts?
What does that mean, uprooted?
It's a good question. What does uprooted mean? If you take a tree or you take a bush and you pull it up, it's called uprooted.
Right.
So if you go weeding, you know, you're pulling weeds up by their roots. If you leave the roots in the ground, they're going to grow back. So they were basically being asked to be moved from the location because they could no longer function the way they were designed to function.
And where were they moved? To which other location?
They would have been moved to another dimension. They would have been moved back to the spiritual dimension known as Zeranpin, the Garden of Eden. Remember, Adam was a creation of the spiritual level.
Right.
And so when he did the mistake, the wrong action, the sin, if you have no other word, then the effect was he lost his stature and he was removed from the Garden of Eden, the spiritual level, and he became a physical being. And they also were affected by that because their purpose is to serve Adam, to serve mankind, to be a footstool, to provide all of the sustenance for mankind. And so they were uprooted. They fell to a lower level of consciousness, and they were saying to God, we no longer serve our purpose, and we should be uprooted. We should be changed. Things, you know, are wrong. It's like if you walk into a room and you feel the energy, but it's not a comfortable energy. It puts you on edge. That's the way they were feeling. At least that's my reading of it.
But they didn't fall into a physical body. They just fell from a lower energy or sephiroth.
That leads to a lot of thoughts and a lot of different discussions, which is very good. It's a very good question. In the spiritual level, there's a consciousness called Earth. Is it in a physical body? No, it's a consciousness. What is the consciousness of Earth? We have a lot of New Age people that refer to Earth as Gaia. They refer to it as this wholeness, whereas most of the Western world has always thought of the Earth as, you know, different parts of the Earth. They don't think of it in terms of consciousness. But what is Gaia? Gaia is the consciousness of Earth, the wholeness of Earth, the unity of everything that is whatever we call Earth at a spiritual level. Does it need to be in a physical body? Does it need to be in the physical planet or going around the sun? Consciousness doesn't need to be in a physical body. But in order to be perceived by anything outside of itself, it needs to have a physical body in order to be perceived. So your question is a good one, but it takes a lot of thought. Did they have a physical body before Adam sinned? He was in the Garden of Eden. Did the Garden of Eden have an earth? Did it have a heaven? Or was it the heaven? You know, it's unclear. No, you know, nobody's ever been there and come back and told us, other than the words of books like the Zohar and, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead and a few other books where people have through their meditations and through their personal teleportation have traveled to where they have traveled and brought back descriptions that are very limiting descriptions, because you can't see what someone has seen in their dreams. You can't see what someone has seen in their meditations. So we do the best we can with these descriptions. And always remember, when we're reading the English translation of the Zohar and of the Bible, you know, there are 70 ways to understand them. And all we're saying is just this one way. But the questions you're asking delve into all of that different consciousness. What does it mean to be a consciousness called heaven? Well, one way of understanding it is the concept of day and night. That's code words for heaven and earth. We have this verse from Jeremiah that says, if my covenant isn't working properly day and night, then I shouldn't have created the heaven and the earth, because day and night is the heaven and the earth. Although we are using different words for day and heaven and night and earth, all of that is, you know, you have to contemplate. That's That's the, to me, that's the beauty of the Torah. Should we stay with this or should we move on?
Let's move on and I'll think about what you said and go through it.
Verse 374.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne, feel free to chime in if you wish.
Okay,
no,
I was thinking that if there's something that you can't is out of your range of understanding, so you wouldn't be able to relate to it. You know, like they say, the American Indians, when the ships came on the ocean, the Indians didn't see them because they'd never encountered a ship before. So they didn't even see it because they didn't have the software. They didn't know what they were looking at. So if we're saying that the realm that was first created, it's possible that we, you know, whatever we would try to visualize, we would miss the mark because it was something that was before anything that we know. That makes sense?
It makes more than sense because it's very much a spiritual law. You see, in the physical world, you see what you expect to see. If I expect someone to treat me badly, they will. If I expect someone to be kind to me, they will. We see what we expect to see. We experience what we expect to see. And if something is totally outside of our expectation, we won't be able to understand it and we won't see it. The metaphor that I use to explain this, and I've done it in a few other places, but it's always good to repeat. There's a story about the Baal Shem Tov and Moshe the Ganef, Moshe the Thief. Moshe the Thief would steal, and he was a very good thief. He would steal, and then he would run to the Baal Shem Tov and ask for a blessing so that the police wouldn't find him. And the Baal Shem Tov would give him a blessing. He didn't say, so the police don't find you. He would just give him a blessing, and that created a protection shield that the police couldn't penetrate. And then a very rich Russian nobleman came to town, and everybody knew he had a chest with 50,000 golden rubles. And Moshe had the idea, well, this, if I steal this, I'll never have to steal again. And so I'm going to do that. But of course, a great treasure like that was well guarded. So when it was stolen, the police knew that it could only be Moshe who had the skills to do that. So they went looking for him. And Moshe is running to the Baal Shem Tov to get his blessing so that he can be hidden from the police. And when he gets to the house of the Baal Shem Tov, he's told that the Baal Shem Tov has passed away. So he said, so who has taken his place? And they told him it was the Magid de Bezrit. And so let me see him. They usher him in for a private audience to the Magid. And he explains that the Baal Shem Tov always gave him a blessing after he stole. And the Magid de Bezrit says, get out of here. I'm not going to give a blessing to a thief. I can't believe that you're telling that about my master. So he's thrown out of there, and he doesn't know what to do. He can't go home. He can't go anywhere that he's known. So he runs into the forest. And he falls asleep crying himself to sleep because he doesn't know what else to do. And in his dream, the Baal Shem Tov comes to him and says, go to my grandson and he will give you the blessing. So he goes to his grandson, who is a very righteous soul. I don't know if you know anything about the Baal Shem Tov's lineage. He's a very righteous soul, and the grandson blesses him. So he's safe. The police can't find him. He has this protection shield. Now, we can talk about the morality of the story, but as I teach and I've been taught, there is no morality and ethics in the Torah. There's only energy. There's only metaphysical levels of consciousness. We perceive them as morality and ethics because that's what we expect to see. But what's the real issue? What is the real essence of this story about a thief being blessed by a holy man? And it's the essence is that the Baal Shem Tov has no element of thievery within him. He can't conceive of theft because he's above theft. And so when he would look at Moshe the Ganef, he would see a righteous man in his potential. And he saw who he would become. And who Moshe was going to become was one of the righteous people of the generation. So he would give him a blessing because he didn't see a thief. He saw a righteous person because that's what he expected to see. And this is true of ourselves. It's true of the essence of what Kabbalah teaches, because we are supposed to work on ourselves. We're supposed to evaluate our character traits. And if we see a character trait that we think is negative, that we don't like, we're supposed to tear it out of ourselves and throw it away and not be that person anymore. But if we achieve that level where we've thrown out this character trait, because one of the principles of Kabbalah is every person in your life is your mirror. You can't see who you are. You can only see who you are as a reflection in the people in your life. So when you see somebody who is talking Lashon Hara, or you see somebody who is doing something inappropriate, you see somebody who is stealing, or you see somebody who's not making the connections the way they should make them, their essence is really in you. And that if you then take out of you, tear out of it by its roots, those character traits that you see in the other person, that person changes. It's not them who change, it's you who change. But your mirror is now reflecting who you have become. So that thing you saw that you didn't like in that other person is no longer there, because it's not in you. We only see what we expect to see. Are there any questions?
That's very cool.
Go ahead, Malka.
Miriam.
Okay, Malka. Are you Malka?
Yes, ma'am, I'm Malka.
Well, there's Malka on the phone and there's Miriam, and I apologize because I'm not used to Miriam's voice, so my mistake.
That's okay.
I was just wondering if when you say to tear it out, is there a there a way to turn it over rather than tear it out? In other words, that it becomes a good quality rather than a negative quality.
Yes. It's called teshuva. It's called returning to Hashem. Because that character trait that you're perceiving is negative, that character trait has a spark of light within it. But you're perceiving it as negative for whatever reason, usually because you've absorbed that teaching from the society around you. But when you do teshuvah properly, you actually transform the action, the negative actions, into positive actions. Now, very few people do teshuvah properly. Our sages have taught us that the reason that the temple was destroyed and the reason the Mashiach has not yet come has to do with hatred for no reason. And we all have hatred for no reason. And very few of us understand what is hatred for no reason. Because the typical idea is there was Cain killed Abel. So he must have had hatred for no reason, because how can you kill your brother? And, the 10 brothers sold Joseph. They wanted to kill him. That must have been hatred for no reason. But in each of these cases, there was jealousy. There was a reason that Joseph received this being sold into Egypt. There is a reason that Abel was killed. Without going into a whole lot of detail, and we do that in other Zohar classes if you listen to the recordings, but these hatred for no reason is very difficult to understand. And the only way I understood it was a few years ago on Tisha B'Av. I read a midrash that said that Abraham went into the upper temple, the temple in Shemayim, and he looked around and there was nobody there. And he called out to God, "Where are my children?" And God said, "They sinned. I had to destroy the temple. They're gone. They're in exile." And Abraham said, but wasn't there 50? God said, no. Wasn't there 40? Wasn't there 30? You know, the same pattern that he did about Sodom and Amorah. Only this time he didn't stop at 10. He went down and said, it wasn't there one. God said, no, there wasn't even one. And Abraham said, so what did they do? He said, when they hear about someone else with a problem, their first unconscious thought is better them than me. That's hatred for no reason. And that's what we all need to develop to a spiritual level, where we realize that's true, and we work on doing teshuvah to remove that, to transform that hatred for no reason into love for no reason. And all of these, Marianne, all of these subjects are covered in the basic classes in ways that, you know, are not taught in other aspects of Judaism. It's only in the Kabbalah that you hear these kinds of stories and teachings. Are there any other questions, or our time is essentially up?
Yeah, your definition of hatred different there.
It's sinat hinam. Is the Hebrew phrase.
Because in that analogy, though, the person is not actually thinking about the other. It's more of a passive type of emotion than one would normally think. Hatred is an aggressive feeling. But if a person is saying, I'm in my own self-preservation, I'm not experiencing something that's more of a passive. They're not really even thinking about the other person. They're just thinking about themselves. So normally when you think about hatred, you're thinking you're have an aggressive emotion towards another person. So
hatred is a very strong word, you're right. But the word hinatsinam is translated as hatred for no reason. Sinam is a word that is hatred. It is a very strong emotion. And that's where our essence is a desire to receive. Before Adam sinned, our essence was exactly that, a desire to receive. That was what we were created to do, to receive the goodness of God, the goodness of Hashem. But when Adam sinned, that desire moved to the left column more so. And that left column became a desire to receive for oneself alone. The metaphor of eating from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, was we injected into the consciousness of the human being selfishness. And we have to remove that selfishness on an unconscious level. We're not aware of what we're thinking of unconsciously, but we need to become aware. That's the meaning of the higher spiritual levels, where you reveal your unconscious consciously. We don't act as robots. When you say make a statement, a sentence. The cow jumped over the moon. You don't think of the words in that sentence. You just start it. The. And the rest of the sentence flows unconsciously. That's being a robot. In Kabbalah, we're taught to strive to always be conscious of what we do. To be conscious that I am saying the cow jumped over the moon. All five of those words I choose to say. I could have said the cow rolled over the moon, or I could have said that the cow looked up at the moon. Each of those sentences is different. And the consciousness that I inject into that those words is different. And that's what Kabbalah teaches. And that's why it's so difficult to grow in the level of Kabbalah. But it's possible. That's the level of the Kabbalist. And that's why I'm very clear. I'm a student of Kabbalah. I'm not yet, and more than likely in this lifetime, will not reach the level of a Kabbalist. I've given you a lot to think about, so unless there's another question, we're going to just wish you all shalom for the day. And
thank you.
Remind you that there's another class at 7 o'clock West Coast time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Shalom
Hannah.
To all.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.